Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Radio Edutalk. This is John Johnson in Glasgow. A slightly different show tonight because what we've got is a series of pre-recorded audio segments we're going to be listening to from the Scottish Science Festival Food and Drink Special. Now, we're going to start off with hearing from Dr. Deborah McNeil, who is the director of the Glasgow Science Festival. She's going to be introducing the whole thing. So, here we go.
Hi, I'm Deborah McNeil, and I'm the director of the Glasgow Science Festival. From our inaugural festival in 2007, the Glasgow Science Festival has grown into a citywide festival and is now one of the largest in the UK. In 2013, the overarching theme is Glasgow Naturally, tying in with the Scottish Government's Year of Natural Scotland. There are direct links with this theme, Glasgow Naturally, to subject areas including environment, foods, ecology, wildlife and agriculture, but there is also much scope for broader interpretation. Glasgow is a natural home for science and engineering because of its history. Where was ultrasound for expectant mums invented? Glasgow, naturally. And because Glasgow is at the forefront of ultra-modern disciplines like bioelectronics and nanotechnology, where better to have a science festival than Glasgow, naturally. You get the hang of it. The theme of this webcast is food, and that will feature strongly in the June 2013 festival. We've all got used to having much more information about the food we buy. We're told the countries of origin of our food and what's in it. We know that perhaps lamb comes from Scotland or New Zealand, that biscuits may contain so many calories, so much salt, so many grams of sugar. What very few of us know, and what young people are rarely told, is the process by which food arrives in the shops. There are lots of important questions for pupils to explore about food across the curriculum. Where does the food come from? Are we going to be able to rely on our existing sources of food when the climate changes? What are the opportunities for careers in the food industry? Young people know little of the farms growing food. How does the wildlife fare on these farms? Does farming and conservation coexist? Are the farmers well paid, or are they just scraping by? Many of us get our food from the supermarkets, but how much do we know about the food chain? Whilst a great deal of our food is produced in Scotland, plenty isn't. It is driven, shipped, or flown from places we know little about. Food security becomes an issue when climate change affects these areas. Will we still be able to rely on them to supply us with food in the future? Or will they prioritise their local populations first? Should we be changing our eating habits so that we don't place such a heavy food footprint in distant countries? Young people need to learn where Scotland's food comes from and what interesting opportunities for careers there are within the food industry. Firstly, we will hear from Moira Stalker from the Scottish food and drink industry. Then we will hear from a number of school projects and people from industry supporting them. Thank you.
My name is Moira Stalker and I'm the National Coordinator for the Scottish Food and Drink Federation Schools Programmes. The Scottish Food and Drink Federation is a trade association that represents food and drink manufacturers in Scotland. The food and drink manufacturing industry is the largest manufacturing sector in Scotland and it employs a wide variety of people and a large number of people as well. This part of the industry is actually the bit that takes the raw products, processes them, adds value to the products, and these are the kind of and produces the kind of food products that you would buy in the supermarkets or the shops, perhaps as ready meals, perhaps as packaged food products, but the kind of products that you would see in supermarkets and shops all over Scotland and indeed the world as well. The Scottish Food and Drink Federation has a number of strategic priorities, and one of these is to enhance the competitiveness of the food and drink industry. And in order to do this, we need really talented and educated people that are able to take the industry forward, come up with new ideas, new innovations, and keep it at the forefront of Scottish industry. So one of the ways of doing this is to make the industry an attractive place for people to work. Too often it's not seen as actually being an exciting and dynamic place to work. It kind of gets tarred with the brush of the hairnets and wellies. So we are really trying to address that issue and let people know how dynamic and diverse it is, and also the range of opportunities that are available in the industry as well. So in order to help us do this, we have received funding from the Scottish Government to run the schools programme, which we call A Future in Food. A Future in Food is one of a number of food and drink projects, all linking to the Scottish Government's food and drink policy as well. And these all have a common aim as well, in that we want to allow young people to find out where the food in their plates actually comes from. But in particular, the particular project that I work with is all about promoting the food and drink industry as a career destination of choice. What we really want to do is to make people understand, both teachers and young people, the relevance of a broad range of subjects to potential career opportunities and to the skills required in industry. In particular, we want to get young people to be aware that subjects like science, technology and maths are really, really important to the industry. It's very much based on processing, and food processing is really about a series of chemical reactions. So chemistry is important, biology is important in terms of microbiology. There's also an awful lot of machinery and technology involved in the industry in order to process foods, to keep it safe, to package it as well. So there's a wide variety of subjects that are very, very important to the industry and required by employers and industry as well. So we're really keen to promote that. We also want to help pupils make connections between what they actually learn in school, be it the subjects or the skills they're learning in schools, to particular qualifications and skills required by the industry, so they can perhaps identify employment opportunities and career pathways. For example, maybe many people have never thought of an idea, of a career rather, in environmental management. That's really vital to the industry. So are careers in areas like sustainability, packaging, technology, but there's also a wide variety of careers as well, including sales, marketing, IT, HR as well. Ultimately, what we want to do is to inspire pupils to also make connections between what they're actually eating every day, thinking about that, think about where it comes from, what were the processes employed to get it to that stage, what are the stages that go into it, what sort of people were involved in making it, and maybe think about employment in the food and drink industry as well. So in order to do this, the project that I run actually brokers partnerships between schools and industry. What we want to do is to get industry into school and schools into industry, so that they can see what one another does, get to know one another, and therefore allow pupils to understand exactly what sort of jobs are available in the industry, the kind of people that work in the industry, and the sort of opportunities available to them. So my role in it all is to really broker partnerships between schools and industry. And what we want people to do, or what we want schools to do, is to really use food and drink as a context for learning. So I would broker a partnership between a school and a company, help the school to identify what the company can offer them, and then we would develop programmes, activities, workshops, whatever, that would help the industry to come into the school to help support the teacher to deliver the curriculum by using a real industrial partner, and also allowing the pupils to understand the context for some of the subjects that they're understanding. For example, maths can be used for costing, science can be used for discovering the properties of fats and oils. We're also talking about developing a sustainability project for chemistry. So looking at plastics and how these are used in the industry. These are just some of the examples. And what I've been doing today is developing unique partnerships across Scotland. As you can probably imagine, we adopt different approaches in each partnership, so it really depends on the school and the company. There's no one size fits all. It's really about each school, each company, coming up with whatever suits them. We've developed scenarios, which you can find on our website, to set the scene and to allow people to see what we mean by different things like sustainability or ethical trading, and where these could fit into the industry. But I also don't do it on my own either. I do link with a very wide range of industry and other partners, so universities, local authorities, other partners that can get involved and support what we're doing as well, because we want to make it as broad as possible and to make it as appropriate as possible for everyone involved. I also link with the other food education programmes as well, so if they can support us perhaps with farm visits through the Royal Highland Education Trust, we'll do something like that, or we could perhaps link to eco schools or seafood in schools. So that's really a very brief overview of what we do. What we need to do now is build on what has been achieved to date, strengthen the partnerships we've developed with stakeholders, and extend the reach of the programme. We're also looking for new approaches and themes, and we would love it if you would get involved with us. The website's on the PowerPoint slides that accompany this presentation. So if you can have a look at this, see some of the case studies that we've been involved in, maybe get involved, get in touch with us and tell us what you would like to see us do. We would love to improve our offering and make it more appropriate for schools to work with our industry. Thank you very much for listening to this.
So that was Moira Stalker from the Scottish Food and Drink Industry. The URL from that is http://www.sfdf.org, and we'll have the link in the show notes. Next, we're going to hear from Jess Cook, who is from the Young Engineer Science Club, and she's going to be talking about science on the menu.
The Great Scottish Dessert Challenge. Here's the scenario. Your team works in the development lab at Yummy Enterprising Scottish Desserts. Just call it Yummy. In this challenge, you have to investigate the current frozen dessert market and, based on your findings, develop a new product to fill a gap in the market. Once you've created the perfect product, you have to devise a marketing plan to ensure your product wins over the board. So, as well as creating a product that tastes great, the students have to consider what other unique attributes a product could have that would make it stand out in the freezer aisle. These could include, say, locally sourced ingredients, healthy, nutritious ingredients, a product that meets specific diet requirements. It could have to use free-range or organic ingredients. It could have to use packaged or recyclable materials, or it could have unusual flavour combinations. The project is to mimic, in principle, the industry process of selecting, designing and developing a new food product, with the bonus of being able to eat the results in the classroom. Alongside creating a new frozen dessert, the students will carry out consumer surveys, design marketing materials and consider storage issues. Making ice cream is a fun and delicious way to build science skills. Students experience hands-on a change of state as the liquid ingredient turns into a frozen solid dessert. They will also experience why adding salt to ice causes a reduction in the freezing point of water, and that cooling can change the properties of a material. Furthermore, they'll practice following directions and measuring with accuracy to complete a recipe, as well as recording and analysing results. The feedback from our recent CPD sessions all around Scotland suggests that this is going to be an extremely popular project. Information on this and other projects is available online at the Young Engineers and Science Club Scotland website.
Thanks very much to Jess Cook, and the website again that we in the show notes is www.yecscotland.co.uk. We're going to next hear from Kerry Crichton from Education Scotland, talking about food for thought.
Hello, my name is Kerry Crichton. I'm a Health and Wellbeing Development Officer with Education Scotland. And I also have an additional remit for a focus on food and health within the curriculum. We're very fortunate in Curriculum for Excellence that health and wellbeing is placed so highly in the curriculum, and that the food and health experiences and outcomes are expected for all learners to establish an understanding of a healthy diet, one which is composed of a variety and balance of food and drinks. Children require the knowledge and skills to make healthy food choices and to establish lifelong healthy eating habits. They develop an appreciation that eating can be an enjoyable activity and understand the role of food within social and cultural contexts. They also explore how the dietary needs of individuals and groups vary through life stages, for example during pregnancy and puberty, and the role of breastfeeding during infancy. Learners should develop knowledge and understanding of safe and hygienic practices and their importance to health and wellbeing, and apply these in practical activities with everyday routines such as good oral health. They should also develop an awareness that food practices and choices depend on many factors, including availability, sustainability, season, cost, religious belief, culture, peer pressure, advertising and the media. Part of the work that I've been involved in at Education Scotland, I've developed some resources. I did this in partnership with my colleagues in Science, Global Citizens and Outdoor Learning. We looked at all the different aspects of anything to do with food. We grouped them. It was a post-it note exercise. We grouped them together and they sort of sat into nine branches. From that, we developed a poster. The poster takes the form of a mind map, so there's lots of information, there's pictures, so it's easy to use for different people. The poster is a snapshot of ideas about learning about food. It's not intended to be definitive, and the poster aims to stimulate practitioners and learners to think about food across the curriculum and beyond. We also, in creating that, we worked with a number of food education stakeholders who are funded by Scottish Government. They were fabulous with great ideas, the expertise on eco schools in Royal Highland Education Trust, the Scottish Food and Drink Federation, and Crofton Connection. So there's many partners out there that can support schools with developing their lessons for children around food and health. The other bit with the poster, there's also a leaflet that looks at food as a context for learning across all the curricular areas. And food's an excellent context for learning as it fits in really well with across so many of the curricular areas, and it's a really good one to help share knowledge about food, but in a way that's not obvious. We're going to sit down and learn about nutrition. It can be done through science, sort of looking at the function of vitamins and minerals, genetic engineering. Mathematics is really important. The recent Scottish survey of literacy and numeracy highlighted that pupils need further support on weighing and measuring and decimals and fractions, and food would be an excellent way to look at that, and sort of timing, cooking, preparation, planning of meals, sort of presentation of food, data analysis. There's many, many ways across mathematics as well. So it fits in really well across the curriculum and encourages, gives opportunities for good opportunities for interdisciplinary learning as well, and that way knowledge can be enhanced. You'll be able to find these resources. They're called Food for Thought on the Education Scotland website, and feel free to have a look at those. And there's also a whole list of websites and information that will help when people are planning the experiences and outcomes around food and health.
Thanks, Kerry. We'll put a link to Kerry's presentation about this and to Education Scotland's resources in the notes when we publish the podcast online. Finally, this evening we've got John Hancock from Fruitful Schools, who's going to be talking about school orchards. I don't think I've ever actually been in a school that has got a school orchard. I'd be really interested to go and visit one.
Uh, Science Festival special on food and drink, and I'm delighted to be joined just now by John Hancocks. John, could you just start by giving us a little bit of a background to your career in education and what your current is?
I'm John Hancocks. I'm director of a project called the Commonwealth of Oakshire, which is looking to develop school orchards, and also various community orchards, and quite often linking school and community orchards together. I've actually been working in the area of food growing with children for quite a number of years, probably 10 years or so. We actually started with the Children's Garden in Glasgow Botanic Gardens, which was sort of raised beds with vegetables and so forth, and then I've gradually got more interested in food, partly out of just that I like growing fruit, and it's just a relatively easy and a nice thing to grow, but also that it fits well with the school year, in the sense that a lot of people discover a bitter experience that when they grow vegetables, they run into the summer holidays, whereas the growing fruit, you sort of plant the trees in winter, just at the start of the planting season at the moment, and you have blossom in the spring, and then you have the fruit in autumn. And the summer, sort of, you're allowed to have a summer holiday, which is not a bad thing.
And can you tell us a little bit more then about the Commonwealth Orchard Project, you know, where it originated, and when schools actually link in with yourselves, how does the project operate?
Yeah, okay. Well, the Commonwealth Orchard, the idea of it came about roughly 5 years since we launched the project, which was pretty much when Glasgow was awarded the Commonwealth Games. So we actually did the first planting at the end of December in 2008. And the aim was to plant a whole lot of little orchards all over, well, mainly over Glasgow, but also we've been planting in other other places all over Scotland, and gradually that's taken off, and we've actually had a new project that's developed from the Commonwealth Orchard, which is called Fruitful Schools, and the idea with this is really to encourage, to make it as easy as possible, and to encourage schools to plant some fruit trees with kids. And we've also worked with Eco Schools and the food module that they've been developing, and also with enterprise teachers using fruit growing, and also sort of exhibits of fruit and gathering fruit that would otherwise go to waste. In quite a number of different areas of the curriculum, so it ties in with healthy eating, it ties in with the sort of eco agenda, and increasingly with the new curriculum for excellence, it ties in very well with that as well. So it sort of seems to hit lots of buttons, really. And from my point of view, I think what people like about it is that it's something simple, relatively inexpensive to do, and there's sort of longevity to it. An orchard will last for 50 years, and I think people are quite inspired by the idea that what they're doing is going to have a long-lasting effect on the school and the school grounds for quite a long time to come.
And what about if schools don't have any land, or if there's a local, say, within a city environment for growing an orchard?
Yeah, I mean, my experience is that there's usually, if there isn't school land available, there's quite often a nearby parkland, church land, housing association owned land, city council owned land. There's usually not a huge shortage of land if a school reaches the people and they would like to plant some fruit trees for
benefit of the school and of the community. I very rarely find a situation where it's completely impossible to find somewhere that's suitable. So I wouldn't be put off by relatives of land. I would say that thinking a bit laterally is a good thing. And also, you quite often find that there's a whole lot of food-growing projects, community food-growing projects, and you know, they're often very keen to link up with schools. So, you know, so it can be allotments, it can be community gardens. It's worth asking around to see what people are already doing rather than necessarily starting something that's completely new. So, you know, sort of linking up and trying to make more of what's already there is often a good idea as well.
And just finally, John, can you give us some kind of information on how teachers or other educators might get involved and an idea of the time scale? You mentioned the situation around the teams earlier on, but if people want to get more information, want to get started, how would you go about it? And what would be the best way for a school to actually take it forward as well? Do they need extra support, or is it something that can be done through
school? I mean, at the moment, with the Fruitful Schools, we're putting together packs of 8 trees, which we're selling more or less at cost price to the schools, and they come with information on how to plant, and we also try and link up the different schools so that schools that have been doing it for a bit quite often give some advice to sort of newcomers. So, you know, that sharing of knowledge is quite nice. So in terms of people getting involved and getting some trees and getting the information to get started, the Commonwealth Orchard website, which is www.commonwealthorchard.com, or if it's the Fruitful Schools one, which is www.fruitfulschools.com, you know, either of those will link to us, and we can help them from there. Or, you know, drop me an email, john@commonwealthorchard.com, and I'll just send on information. But it's what I'd say is it's a nice thing to do, and you know, I've rarely seen projects that kind of get the whole school as involved and as sort of infused, and I think that's really why I've been, you know, sort of so keen to promote it, really. In terms of what's a good time to get involved, there's a joke about when's the best time to plant a fruit tree, and the best time to plant a fruit tree, seriously, is in winter when the trees are dormant. But the sort of jokey answer is it's 20 years ago. So it's the benefit of the fruit now. So I'd really say that the best time to get planting is as soon as possible, because, you know, the trees grow for a long time and you want to get them productive.
John, thank you very much for joining us on Radio EduTalk this evening, and best wishes for the future.
Thank you very much.
And I can just add my thanks to David, thanks to John Hancock from Fruitful Schools. The URLs from him are www.commonwealthorchards.com and www.fruitfulschools.com. It sounds like a great project to get involved in if you've got a wee bit of space in your school for a fruit tree. I also thank very much Dr. Deborah McNeil, who kicked us off, Moira Stalker, Jess Cook, Kerry Crichton, and the person we didn't hear from tonight, who was Rebecca Crawford, who has organised most of the audio and sent that over to us. So thank you very much, Rebecca. Thanks very much to anybody who's listening. This will be published on edutalk.cc along with links to the various websites of the participants. You can get in touch with us by using the hashtag edutalk, EDUTALK, or emailing edutalker, that's EDUTALKR, info@hotmail.co.uk or by leaving a comment on the edutalk.cc website. That's all from me tonight. We'll be back next week. We'll be here at 7 o'clock for, we think we've got to confirm, for Skills Development Scotland, and at 8 o'clock with Joe Dale, who is a modern language and foreign language technology consultant, who's going to be talking about using ICT to support classroom practice and professional learning for MFL teachers. And that will be the last show of the year. So it just remains for me to say good night, folks.